Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts as they share with you the insider's guide to property investing.
All right, folks, we're on the Property Couch, your insider's guide to property investing. I'm Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel. And he's Ben Kingsley, the Chair of the Property Investment Professionals of Australia and the Property Investment Advisor of the Year. Hello, mate.
G'day, mate. How you going?
Very, very well. That's good. Once again, we're the laughingstock of international commentary around the fact that we can't get a sitting Prime Minister to fulfil a sitting term.
Well, we're catching up with Japan and Italy. That's what we're doing. You know, it's obviously a competition to see how many Prime Ministers you can have in a short period of time. Five in five.
Well, that's very possible. Do you have a view from Pippa's perspective on what impact that might have for the property market with Malcolm Turnbull at the helm?
I got a couple of journalists asking some questions in terms of what does that mean for the industry. It's obviously too early to make a big call on what's going on. We like the fact that he believes in an open and free market. That's always a good sign. And you let the market mechanism do what it needs to do, and educating people around that. So we'd like to think that the Liberal Party will hold firm on their views on negative gearing, which is, you know, basically they're off the table in terms of any reviews, which is going to be pleasing. And the fact that, you know, he's obviously been able to be very successful in his own personal life in terms of, you know, building wealth for his household, we think that's a good step, because from our point of view and why we do this podcast is we want to try and see people become self-funded retirees and be less of a burden on the government purse strings. So from that point of view, that's all good. It's been an interesting week, hasn't it?
Well, it has. I mean, he's clearly an abundance thinker. He's only worth $190 million from one of the reports I had, so the poor guy. But I think he's been listening to our podcast, to be honest.
Oh, why?
Because I think he thinks that location does 80% of the heavy lifting, and he's been offered the lodge, and he doesn't want to give up his penthouse in Canberra because it's got a better location than the lodge. So,
well, he was on that, what's that, Annabelle Crabb show, the something kitchen? Was it Politician's Kitchen or something like that? Anyway, I saw him on ABC last night, and he was out at his nice little retreat in Scone or somewhere out in, you know, the bush, and they had some yabbies. It was all very good. The other big thing this week was Joe Hockey's five more please sell up foreign investors. Another five that have some have put their hand up and said, I bought this and I'm not an Australian citizen or resident or don't hold a visa. And there's another 400 under review. So in the grand scheme of things, of what, 9.6, 9.7 million dwellings, not big numbers, so I don't think it's going to be a big thing. But the moratorium finishes at the end of November, so if you are a foreign national who bought an existing property in Australia, quick shout out to you, do the right thing. Otherwise, you could go to jail. You could be charged. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, it resets the agenda. Obviously, we had these laws in, foreign investment laws in, they weren't being followed and administered correctly. And I like the idea of getting a register. But please, if you're also thinking of investing in Australia, we love to have you here.
Yeah,
you can buy brand new properties till your heart's content, and that's a good thing. Provides jobs and so forth. You can even buy an existing property if you plan to bowl it over and build something new, because that's all about, again, jobs for builders and chippies and sparkies and the like.
I think that's a good comment to allay some of the fears, because I've recently been asked to comment about what I think about foreign investors in, and I think one of the reasons Malcolm Turnbull's come in and his credentials probably stack up, because I don't get overly political, I've got to be honest, one side versus the other, but given that he's got an investment banking background, he's hugely successful in his own right. I think that abundance thinking is a good thing for the economy.
Yep.
And really, we've got to look for other opportunities to get economic growth in this country, because resources is down and we've got to still provide jobs. So I think foreign investment in our country, as long as they abide by the rules, I see that as a positive thing.
If you're listening, Malcolm, just a couple of tips. It's not all about the big end of town either.
Yes.
You know, look after the small businesses, because we both work in small business and we employ people.
Yes.
All in all, we're looking forward to seeing some more direction in terms of economic output. There's some challenges ahead, some headwinds for the broader economy. So hopefully he can get in there and his new team can do the job.
I don't think it's fair to say that he's only sort of staying in the eastern suburbs, because I think I've recently seen him as far west as Randwick. So he does get out into the western suburbs.
Randwick's not not technically in the west. It's more sort of...
Well, it's just off Bronte, though, so it is, at least it is going west. Anyway, we digress.
Or east.
I thought we've laid, if anyone's listening to this podcast probably for the first time, Ben's mentioned a couple of times, it's always good to sort of hit the pause button, rewind, go back to the first one, and it's kind of a continuing story. But we've covered some really good fundamentals and the basics that people will need to cover if they're looking to buy an investment property. We've talked about the pillars, the steps, the types of property. Today we thought, because you and I both... dealing with clients all the time, you know, as part of our day job.
Yep.
We thought it'd be interesting just to provide some commentary around what we see, common mistakes that people are making, and see if that might be helpful to our listeners.
Yeah, look, and we've only got 30 minutes, not 3 hours, so these aren't going to be all the mistakes. Mm. But again, it's bringing back to what we're here to do. I mean, this is about us giving back to an industry we love and about seeing households create passive income for life. Mm. So we're just going to talk a couple of them, and there'll be more into the future as well. So I'll start off by talking about lending strategy and structure.
Good one. So very good.
I'm a licensed finance advisor, so I'm able to talk about this in detail. What I'm talking about there is when you're building out a portfolio, and with some of the APRA changes that are going on at the moment around borrowing power, more than ever, it's really important to not just think about your current purchase, but actually think, you know, one purchase ahead if you can. So try to understand where your borrowing power is going to limit you in terms of your next move, because that's going to be really important. But obviously on the flip side of that, don't overextend yourself either. I mean, you know, don't go and gear yourself to the Scheidenhausen just to try and get into the property. It just doesn't make sense to me. So when you're talking about strategy and structure, what we're talking about is understanding the treatment of income, the treatment of rent in regards to which lender is going to take a higher rental proportion. Are they going to factor in negative gearing benefits? Are they going to look at add backs? So this is all the complexities. What assessment rates are they going to use? And how do they treat existing debt versus new debt? Will they allow you to do interest-only lending? There is a lot of noise with ASIC at the moment around interest-only lending, and we're obviously of a strong view, a very, very strong view, that interest-only lending is very good if you keep your money in an offset account and you don't spend that money. So if you're paying down your loan but technically not putting it in the loan account, you're building it up in an offset account, it's exactly the same thing. You're paying exactly the same interest rate. And so from that point of view, it's about being in control of your own liquidity to take opportunities as they present themselves.
But in the field, that's hard for people to change that paradigm, isn't it? Because they feel this insecurity around the fact that they're not paying down the loan.
Correct.
Even though you're controlling your cash and you're giving yourself more choices and flexibility under that arrangement.
Yeah, that's right, Bryce. I think what we're saying there, if you're an owner-occupier and a first home buyer going to buy a home and you have no aspirations of building wealth or that type of thing at the moment, P&I's fine. Mm. You know, that's okay. But for the clients that we work with, it's absolutely paramount that we get sophisticated around money management, and we control that, and we generate further cash flows to take that next step into what we're trying to do in building wealth for our clients.
Where that often comes up, listeners, as a hindsight play where people wish they'd done something different, is when you own a principal place of residence, your owner-occupied dwelling, which is in an investment-grade area, and when you want to upgrade, downsize, move, and you make the decision that the existing house that you live in makes for a great investment, you're often left with a dilemma because you've been paying off the loan as much as you possibly can, which is a good thing in principle, but then you want to go and buy a new property but keep the property that's performed well, but you've got no debt on it because you paid it off. And quite often people say, well, if I leverage against that one that has no debt and buy my new principal place of residence, is that deductible? And the answer is you need to talk to an accountant, but generally speaking, no. It needs to be, it's got to pass the purpose test.
Correct.
Where what's the intent of the loan? If the intent of the loan is for a private purpose, it's not deductible. So what Ben just described then is really important to understand, because if you are a long-term property accumulator, you have a buy and hold position and you're looking to build a portfolio, doing what Ben just said before about parking your cash under your control in an offset account will pay dividends when you make the choice change your residence at some point in the future.
Yeah, so, and Bryce has mentioned this before in other podcasts, it's about saying if you're just dealing with one bank and they've said you've hit your maximum borrowing capacity, yet you know that you're a sophisticated money manager and you can do more and you could potentially acquire another property, well, you've done your dough. So obviously we've always said, go and speak to an investment-savvy mortgage broker. Really important because they'll give you choice of lenders and choice of opportunities.
Good point. I always think that it's about the interest that's saved, not the interest that's paid. So another sort of extension of your point is that when someone comes in here and they say, what's the best rate, or I want to go on to an online lender. I've just got a client now who's using an online lender, and their agenda is all about rate. And I'm just thinking, what if I could show you over the life of the loan that you would save more interest and pay less, even though up front it looks like you're not getting the best rate? And so I would say, again, we've talked about microscope and telescope a lot when it comes to lending. You've got to look through the telescope, not the microscope.
Yeah, so let's say you could save $1,000 on a better interest rate, but another lender where he's charging you $1,000 for that, for the benefit of borrowing more of their money, and you're going to control a $300,000 asset that's going to grow at, you know, sort of 5%. Well, there's $7,500 in advantages plus the income coming off that property. So it's again, it's about taking a smart, strategic view and sitting down and looking your options with a qualified professional and making sure you get that balance right between aggression or investing and also risk and reward.
I always think that property investing is a game of finance, not necessarily a game of bricks and mortar. I think that sort of highlights it very well. One of the things that I see commonly is, you know, if Melbourne's done 8.33%, you know the stats, since 1970.
Well, since 74 till the end of 2014, valuer general data says over 8%. That's probably the better way. So that's that rising tide lifting all ships, and we know the reason why, you know, changes, double household income, lower interest rates. It's been a phenomenal time to hold bricks and mortar in Australia over that period of time.
So I think that the mistake, and that we just quoted Melbourne, but of course there's examples all around the country, but I think the mistake that investors are making is that properties are always going to double, or if it's 8%, the rule of 72 suggests that's a 9-year doubling cycle, and just not getting into the localised market enough. Yep. We've talked about this. Australia's not one big market.
No.
It's made of hundreds of sub-markets. And I think that still investors are getting bogged down by the fact that if I buy a property, it's going to double in 8 or 9 or 10 years. And the facts are, a lot of properties that are being built right now that investors are taking up won't see that automatic doubling cycle. And moving forward more than ever. So for me, one of the biggest mistakes as I see is people just having this unquestionable faith that residential real estate will continue to cycle as it has in the past, and therefore all they got to do is put their name on a title. That's just a recipe for disappointment. And I think if you make the decision at 37, I'll just pluck a number, but 37, and then you don't realise until you're 47 that you've made the decision wrong. You can't get those years back.
No.
And as you get closer to retirement, your risk profile changes and everything. So
opportunity cost, looking you right in the face. Yeah, so, and then you're servicing the debt and the thing's not going up in value. You're getting rent, but the rent is really servicing the debt, and you're getting depreciation, which is effectively artificial cash flow that you're going to have to give back when you sell it into, So a really good one there, Bryce. And
so it's a blind faith about the doubling cycle, I'd say, is the second mistake I see.
Yeah, and we've, you know, you hear us go on and on and on about asset selection and the science that is property investing, and that science getting better and better. You know, I actually wrote something last night, which will appear in a magazine in the next coming months, around the research of property investment is getting more and more fundamental, and it's getting more and more granular. And I'm super excited about that because obviously
it's your passion.
Well, it is. And you know, we've built a research tool in our business that we think is world class in terms of identifying opportunities from an aggregate down to a finite street level. And that's amazing in terms of, obviously gives our clients a competitive advantage. And you know, this is the other thing I get really passionate about. I just can't stand it when I hear people saying that property investment is simple and easy. It just gets my goat up. You know, the reason I can't fathom that is because exactly that, yeah, it is easy to go out and put your money on the table and buy an apartment or buy a house or buy off the plan, whatever it may be, because everyone's doing it, and in the past, the rising tide of living all ship. But it just staggers me that people are going to take that view that it's just that easy. And because I've been living in a house and I've, you know, been around property all my life and it's less volatile, so I think I get it. When the science is very, very detailed in regards to understanding consumer confidence, understanding human interest and human behaviour. So if you want to leave great returns on the table, and you've talked about before, if you want to leave $200,000, $300,000, $500,000 on the table in terms of potential opportunity cost because you haven't picked a great asset, well, then property investment is simple and easy for you because you haven't done your homework. So that's a big one for me.
I reckon it's a really good point. I'm of the view that property investing is simple but not easy.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you share the same view, but I think none of the stuff that, you know, if we talk about our four pillars, our five steps, the three things in terms of economic activity, human behaviour, if we run through all of our frameworks and our principles, they are very simple frameworks.
They are.
But I just think that human behaviour gets in the way. Mindset, paradigms, the way you look at the world is different to the way I look at the world, which therefore makes it not easy.
Yeah, and it's not an exact science. So even with the best technology in the world, and make no mistake, in the equity markets there have been professors and elite mathematicians looking to try and build algorithms that can predictively model share prices and so forth. Well, the reality is humans are unique creatures. But you can increase the probability, and that's like any good research tool, should increase the probability of picking the right area, and then inside that area, increase the probability of getting the right asset. But it'll never be a perfect science, because it is, everyone would do it. You know. So it's important to note that. So, yep, the idea of it's simple in terms of following, if you follow the frameworks that we've put on this podcast, and if you follow those and you do the hard yards around the research, you're going to improve your chances of picking a good area and good prospects for capital growth and good income. But if you just think, I'll make it easier for myself by cutting corners, you're going to, you know, basically do your dough.
You remember the Robert Kiyosaki books, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Cash Flow Quadrant? I can't remember which one it is, but he says that risk is just a measure of knowledge. So something that you would consider not risky, a first-time investor would consider risky, just simply because you know more. Yeah. So ultimately what you said before about the research, it becomes critical, because the more you know, the less risky it becomes. So for me, I think we bought 27 properties in the last 60 days.
Yep.
None of that, and a lot of them interstate.
Yep.
None of that feels risky because of the knowledge. I've been doing this for a long time.
Correct.
And I have the same emotion around buying real estate that I have about buying a loaf of bread.
Yep.
But for a first-time investor, that's just poles apart, the emotion in those two things.
It's a really good point. And what I might do for the listeners, I've got this little diagram where I've drawn this sort of seesaw.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's sort of, and there's obviously procrastination and then there's greed. And so I might just speak to that on a little video, and we'll put that up on the website. Because that is the beautiful part about property investment. You can increase your returns by leverage, as long, you know, magnification and so forth, as long as you get your cash flows and all that done. But there's still that element to go run to greed, and you can go too hard at it. But if you build your knowledge up, that knowledge doesn't necessarily mean greed. It just means execution, confidence, support, fundamentals, as opposed to that procrastination point. So good one. Yeah, good.
There you have it, listeners, thepropertycouch.com.au. Check by that in the next couple of weeks. There'll be a video up there that Ben's going to talk about that very thing. I want to talk about adrenaline versus boring.
Ooh, and do tell.
I reckon that a lot of people want to get their kicks out of real estate.
Yeah.
And I reckon the plans that we build for clients that are very effective plans are boring.
They are.
And you've got to get your head around that, because we've talked about this a couple of times. Some of them is paying off the principal place of residence, three or four investment properties, job's done, game over. Yeah,
100,000.
Don't have to do anything more. You get 100 passive income. But for some people, and I say this with sensitivity and respect, but some clients we see don't like their job. Or a bit bored.
Yep.
And so they, instead of going on the weekend bungee jumping to get some adrenaline, they want to get it through residential real estate. And I think the worst example of that is when someone wants to do it through property development. having never property developed before, having probably never invested before, but they've watched a few television shows and they want the excitement. And I was talking to someone yesterday about that very thing. Yeah. And I say from most of the observations that I've seen personally from renovating and from seeing other people do it, is their first, definitely their first one, but usually the first couple, that's where they get their life lessons, their university lessons, where they, in hindsight, look back and go, I would have done that differently,
Yeah.
And whereas if you build a plan that's got a passive income, reverse engineer, it's a few, you know, set and forget properties, making sure you get the asset selection right, still gets you the outcome you're after, but it probably means you still got to go bungee jumping on the weekend to get the heart rate up.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if your job's no good, go and get a job that you're passionate about. And look, if property becomes your passion, well, look us up, see if we've got some jobs. In fact, we've got a couple of jobs going, as we've talked about. We're looking for a property investment advisor. I'm looking for an apprentice mortgage broker as well. So if you want to learn the craft and then potentially help people do their finance, there's another opportunity there as well. So, you know, check out the Empower Wealth website. But coming back to that point, you know, about getting excited around quick and instant gratification and gains, you know, that there's been so many articles in some of the magazines. I earned $180,000 in 11 months. And I'm like, $180,000 in 11 months? Well, gee, that's interesting. That's a good number. Let's unpack that story. So unpacking that story, what's that about? It's like, okay, they spent a $2 million to make $180,000. Mm. So less than a 10% return for the risk profile on that, that's just dumb. So, you know, everyone might ask.
Do they factor in their hourly rate as well?
No, well, which is one of my other, you know, mistakes that I wanted to talk about is don't confuse, and it leverages exactly off this point, don't confuse investing with working. If you're going to go and do a development, if you're going to go and do renovation, go and do those renovations. That's great. I get right behind it, but that isn't investing. That's a second job. You're about to take away your free time and go and create an equity harvest.
And just sleep time.
Yes, sleep time. Well, that's right. I mean, most of us know when we've done the renovations, they're 12-hour days and they're relentless. So if you want to take 2 weeks off and go and equity harvest, brilliant, but don't ever call it pure investing. Hmm. Investing is basically a non-active or what I call passive activity where you do your science, you execute, and you get back on with your life. Hmm. And I've always talked about a great investment property should not take more than 10 hours a year to manage. Really important to understand that, because if you've got your property manager in place, everything's being looked after, you just get on with your life and you enjoy the spoils of good hard research and excellent execution. And that's one of the things. I'm happy for you to go and equity harvest and subdivide and do all those things if you want to be an active worker, as I call it. But if you're going to be a passive investor, it should be a set and forget with a review and either a quarterly or half yearly inspection from your property manager, and everyone's happy.
There you have it, folks. Passive investors need to invest 10 hours a year into their each property. So there's another good framework for you there as well. I want to talk about, I think that we equilibrium is 70% owner ops, 30% investors. So the vast majority own for practical and emotional reasons. And I think that can actually be a trap, because I think that because people are investing in the very thing that's a basic of life,
yep,
shelter,
mm-hmm,
they therefore think investing is easy and straightforward because I live in a house, I bought a house, I settled on a house, therefore I know exactly what to do with investing.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've talked a bit about property investing being a process, not an event. And I worry about a lot of investors who still see it as an event where they just think that once I've overcome the conditioning around not getting into any debt that we get from generations before. Mm. And once we overcome the conditioning that not many, one in 11 working Australians buy one, 73% of them stop at one.
Yeah.
Once they get over that, they've spent a lot of emotional energy at that point, and then the asset selection and the process of investing gets marginalised. And I see that as a huge mistake.
Yeah, oh, look, and that's the DIY mentality, isn't it, Bryce? It's about, I mean, we use real estate agents to sell our property. You know, so, and we're accepting of the fact that if we've got a medical condition, we get specialists in to treat us from a medical point of view. But when it comes to investing money, some people think they're the smartest people in the room. Mm. And in reality, they're doing it part-time, if at all. They've had exposure to it because they've lived in it and they've watched their parents' property grow in value, so it can't be that hard. But the reality is it is a science, and you can time it wrong, you can get the selection wrong, you can get the category of property wrong, you can get so many things wrong. So it's really important that when you're looking at this, you've got to say to yourself, if I am the smartest person in the room, is that a worry to me? Does that increase my risk in terms of getting a poor result? Or if I'm not, do I outsource some of that knowledge? I mean, you're going to build an investor team. You will. You're going to have to do the lending. You're going to have the legal representative to do the conveyancing. You're going to have, you should have a property investment advisor. You potentially, if you're smart, you're going to have a BA in your team. That's a buyer's agent. You should have an accountant in your team. So if you're going to build out this professional team, otherwise, if you're going to try and do it all yourself, you're thinking you're saving money because there might be a professional fee attached to that. But yet, did you sell your own home? Mm. Did you, how have you marketed that home? You obviously think that a real estate agent is potentially going to get you a better result because they're going to, you can't sell a secret, which is one of the big things I talk about with property. If everyone knows about it, usually it's going to attract interest. And when you've got that demand, you're going to get a premium result. Well, the same sort of things apply. If you've got limited time, limited resources, why are you doing this to yourself? Mm-hmm. So don't cut corners, make it easy by someone who comes in and says, here's a complete set price list and stock list. Just buy one of these. You'll have a great result. You obviously need to challenge them from a professional capacity in terms of they are working in my best interest or are they working in their own best interest. And if they are and they can back it up with research and statistics and results and experience and knowledge, leverage from that knowledge.
Mate, no one's an island. That's a really good point. And even if you think of individual sports, tennis players, golfers, they still have a caddy. They still have a coach. They have someone who analyzes their technique, see how they can tweak it. I think that property investing is more of a game of basketball where you've got a bunch of teammates who can help you get to the
end. Great analogy.
But even if you do think about the individual sports, they still are not an island. When people think that property investing, they should be an island. And it largely comes around to people's sense of privacy around their own stuff, which is correct. Cool. That's okay. Yeah. So you've got to have trusted advisors. But I think that's a good point, not seeing it as a team sport.
Yeah, the trusted advisors message is really a big one. It's like, yep, there are a lot of sharks out there. So there's a natural, condition around concern that you're going to get spruiked to, that someone's going to rip you off. That's a good initial sort of thought process to have. But if they're making good sense, they're answering all of your questions, they're supporting it with evidence, then, those people are going to be trusted advisors and they're going to help you get a better outcome.
There you have it, folks. Ben's in the field. He's also a buyer's agent but spends a lot of time building strategies on behalf of investors, and he sees a lot of rear view mirror, looks at people's portfolios so he can see what they've done. I'm on the ground buying for clients each and every day. So there you go. There's a few things that we've seen over and above the basics of making sure you get your ducks lined up and all those sorts of ones that everyone's seen and enough of now. But we thought we'd drill down a bit further and see if we can insightfully share some of the mistakes that we actually see. So folks, Ben mentioned he's going to do a video. So if you stop by thepropertycouch.com.au in the next couple of weeks, that'll be uploaded there for you. We also, as a team, it's got my name on the cover, but we as a team here at Empower, we built a cover story around the Money magazine on how to create a $55,000 passive income.
That's a great read, everyone. So download that.
Well, exclusively for Property Couch listeners.
We're exclusive.
Gonna put it, exclusively.
Beautiful.
We're going to put it on thepropertycouch.com.au so that they can go and download that PDF. Ivis has put that up there for us. And we've also been getting some good reviews on iTunes. So shout out to those people. Thanks for that.
Yeah, thank you very much. We appreciate that you get value out of the time we spend in doing this.
And word of mouth is growing our podcast. We're getting some feedback. So I know most people are listening on their device, but if you do get a chance just to link back to iTunes and give us a star rating, because what that does is it pushes us up the list of suggestions on anyone else who's actually downloading some podcasts. So we get that people are busy, but if they are enjoying the podcast and they can take a couple of minutes just to flick back to the iTunes or the Android store and give us a rating, that will push us up so that we can get the message out to a few more people.
Yeah, and if you're in the industry, if you're an industry practitioner, an accountant, financial planner, property investment advisor, I mean, there's no sales pitch here. This is all good content, and that's what we set it up to be. You'll never hear us pitching for anything. It's important that if you want to teach and educate yourself and your clients, about some sensible property investment strategies, feel free to reach out, contact us and ask us if you want to send it out to your database. We're more than happy for more people to get this information and this knowledge.
We certainly are. So, and again, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram is where you will find out first when the next episode is out. Just a quick shout out. I'm looking for a buyer's agent, Ben. You mentioned a couple of things before.
Yeah, we've got our business is growing, but that's again, it's an internal thing. And if people have a passion for the property investment industry and want a career in this space, then we want to hear from them.
So if anyone loves property and they're passionate about property, just come and talk to us. We'll see if there's a fit. But
hire for attitude, train for skill.
You bet. So we want people who are passionate about property investing. All right, so for the listeners who, at this point, this is where our credibility dives, so if you need to go, feel free to go. We'll see you next week. But for those of you that stick around to the end, we're going to sign off somewhere.
We are. We're going to sign off in Portuguese today.
All right.
And I tell you, if I could ever get these pronunciations right, God help me if I can. But
I think that's why the listeners stick around, just to see how you turn every sayonara into a French undertone.
Apparently, the conversion or translation, I should say, is see you soon, and obviously you will see us soon next week on the Property Couch. But this one is Portuguese, and it's Até breve.
Até breve.
Até breve. Até breve.
That didn't even sound French, Ivis. That sounds pretty good. So there you go, folks. Até breve. We will see you next week.
Let us know in the review if it's right or not. Cheers, everyone.
See you guys. See you next week.